Cal Banion, Cal Banion's hypnosis, etc. You know what? I talked way too much last time. I'm going to have Elrond talk a lot more. Hey, yeah. If you're watching this anywhere except calbanion.com, go there right now. You'll find this video on other websites, but they don't have all the cool stuff that we have right below this video. Links, additional text, and graphics that make this video much more valuable for you. All right, this is Cal Banion's Hypnosis, etc. with L. Ron Ferguson. And let me tell you a little bit about L. Ron. L. Ron is one of the, I think he was the last person to go through our very rare Banion internship program. So I got to watch his videos and coach him along the way when he was brand new with 5-Path and 7-Path. And you know what? He is a 1%er. I'm in the top 1% of the profession. Anytime, you know, I see someone that needs hypnosis services, they can't fit into my schedule, I send them over to L. Ron because I have complete confidence in him. How you doing, L. Ron?
I'm doing good, Cal. And gosh, it's been a journey. I've been here over 3 years now.
Oh my gosh. I knew you since you were just a whippersnapper.
I was just a fresh little hypnosis lamb. Back then I was so much nicer, I think.
Well, you know, and your head was full of all that kind of mush from other schools and stuff.
Yeah, it took a while to get that out. Reshape it, mold it by fire and brimstone. Yes, you think I was last intern. Of course, I'm the last, I'm the bookend. The last book on the shelf, although...
Imagine how important that would be if I would just die. Then you'd be the last ever.
That would be, hey, I got some... No, just kidding. So, Cal, which way are you taking on the way home today?
You could never keep up.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's definitely true.
I don't have a radar detector on my car for nothing.
Exactly.
And then as soon as I get home, I'm hopping on my Harley, and I am
that's
heading
right.
out of town.
Yeah, 500 horsepower, right?
That's
Come on,
right, baby.
Mm-hmm. That's what we do. Well, if you guys don't know who Cal is, he is the 500 horsepower hypnotist of all time. I mean, whatever it is, he's full force, full tilt. Once you get him going, he steps on the accelerator, and it's like a train going down the track. If you see him for sessions, if you get training from him, the race is over before it starts, because Cal knows hypnosis. He knows more than anybody that I've ever met as far as how to move a client from having their issue totally overtake their lives to being completely free. I've never seen anything like it, and that's why I'm here.
That's right. We move them from feeling bad to being glad.
That's right.
All right, what you got for me? Oh, can I do a couple announcements real quick?
Go for it.
Hey, you guys, over there on the blog is my schedule of classes. You can go to hypnosiscenter.com to get the latest version. You know, you could be watching this 10 years from now, and the hypnosiscenter.com will always have my latest schedule for classes. The NGH approved Banion Hypnosis Certification Super Course with 5-Path and 7-Path, and our Week of Power. I also want to mention that, yes, we just got the word last week that the Solid Gold Weekend, the National Guild of Hypnotists Solid Gold Weekend, which is by invitation only, some of the highest scored, most awarded speakers from the National Guild of Hypnotists Convention are invited to come to the Solid Gold, and it's going to be in Anaheim this year, February 25th and 26th. Let's see, that's it. That's all my announcements. Oh, this is not an announcement. It's something I want to talk about later. Go ahead. What you got for me?
We'll have you keep that up your sleeve, right?
You got
Let's go ahead and continue where we left off last episode. We were just talking about the pros and cons, mostly cons, about one day getting rid of the word hypnosis, and we started to really discuss hypnosis and trance and how these words are interchangeable. And right now we're going to segue into the idea that there is a hypnotized feeling, and how that came about. What to do about it, if it is definitely something that you have to have with each client, or if it's not important. So, Cal, why don't you give me, what's your 2 cents about how that idea that there's a hypnotized feeling came about?
I'd love to give you a dissertation on that, but you know what I figure? I talked way too much last episode. Why don't you start off with that, and then you can hand it to me when you're done.
You said that already. All right, fine. You want this? You want a piece of this? All right, I'll show you. So as far as the hypnotized feeling is concerned, sometimes my clients, they come to me and they go, oh, well, you know, I felt deep last time. I mean, I've heard it all. They've said, oh, that was really strong. Yeah, I felt like that was some strong hypnosis. Or, man, oh boy, I felt really hypnotized. And I've also heard, I didn't feel anything. I didn't feel hypnotized at all. Are you sure that, you know, I didn't feel it working? I've had people open their eyes and look at me and go, it's not working. I don't feel anything. And we'll talk about how to handle that in a moment. But one of the reasons I think that that's out there in people's mind is, you think about it. You watch TV your whole life and hear stories your whole life about people going into hypnosis, people going under hypnosis, all the crazy things people do. And through that time, starting from a little kid, you start to make up a constellation of all the kinesthetic sensations that you think that must feel like. And so you make it up in your mind, you have this preconception, this idea of, okay, well, that person who's squawking like a chicken, they must feel that. Or they see a person who's walking on glass, they go, they must feel maybe tingly. Or another person might look at it and say, oh, they must feel heavy in their body. Or the other person might look at it and say, they must feel like they're in a magical trance. And they have their own internal representation for what being in a magical trance feels like. And so they have this idea, or they have this belief, or they have this made-up kinesthetic expectation. And when they sit down in your office, half of the time they might feel that same magical sensation, because what's expected sometimes tends to be realized if they have a particularly strong or powerful imagination, or whether they're more kinesthetic in nature. And sometimes they have more of a type A personality. They sit down and they wait for it to happen. They wait for that magical feeling to come. And maybe the pre-talk wasn't done extensively enough, or maybe they just still have that in their head and they don't experience that, and then they start to talk about, oh, well, you know, maybe I didn't feel like I was in hypnosis. And so what are your thoughts on that, Cal? And then I'll go into the next part of this topic.
Well, you know, I think you covered it completely.
Okay, great.
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
No, actually, you did.
Oh.
No, I'm kidding.
Oh.
Okay, you know, the thing is they, one of the big things is they expect to either go to sleep or to be unconscious. So if they can still hear you, they think, oh, I'm not doing it because I'm still awake, or I'm no longer conscious. And I think that's where most of that comes from. And that's why it's very, very important that we do one special thing. Go ahead.
I'm going to guess what that one special thing is. If I was Cal, I'm going to channel Cal. If I was Cal, what would I say? Well, aside from the obvious, give them a big, extensive pre-talk. Explain to them what we mean when we say sleep, or say, when you go in hypnosis, you're not going to be asleep or unconscious. But what was the special thing, Cal? I'm dying to know now.
Okay, well, you know, first of all, we don't in person give our thorough pre-talk, because just it would get boring, it would drive you crazy, and you wouldn't have consistent quality. So we have a video called The Truth About Hypnosis, where I give my pre-talk once well, and then we play that for our clients. That takes care of about 90-95% of their questions, and they're given a pen to write down any questions they might have. When that's done, then we figure the pre-talk is done. But then the one really important thing we need to do is, once we've got them hypnotized, we need to covertly test for a deep level of hypnosis, at least stage 4 on the Harry Aaron scale, threshold of somnambulism, and then we can overtly test for a lighter stage of hypnosis, such as hypnoidal or light hypnosis, using like eye lock or arm lock, or catalepsy is a better word for it, and prove to them that they're hypnotized. And then that's when they find that they cannot open their eyes because we suggested they couldn't, or we lock their arm out in front of them and they can't lower it because we tell them that they can't, even though they try and they try and they try, then they are convinced that they're hypnotized. These are called convincers, and so we don't have to worry about any dumb preconceptions that they might come in with. And one more thing, A good pre-talk removes any misconceptions that they might have about hypnosis that could cause fear or make them think that they're not in hypnosis. But there's one fear that all clients have who've never been hypnotized before that we cannot eliminate with a good pre-talk, and that is the fear that they cannot be hypnotized. So when we do convincers like eye lock convincer, arm catalepsy convincer, then what happens is not only do we override their need to quote feel hypnotized by proving that they're hypnotized, it also is a convincer that they can do it, and it removes that last fear that no pre-talk could ever remove. Back to you, Elron.
That's great, Cal. One thing that I like to do additionally is I like to really stress the importance of the reason that they're here isn't necessarily so that they can experience a hypnotized feeling, but it's so that they can get their issue resolved. Because sometimes you don't have people, they're still looking for that kinesthetic magical sensation or to feel deep or under. And we can address that in the pre-talk, and maybe they still have it. I mean, obviously, the number one rule of troubleshooting is that if something isn't working, then something before it wasn't done thoroughly enough or correctly. And so whenever there's problems like that, we take a step back. I tell people before I begin with them, I say, listen, from time to time, you might wonder that there might be a hypnotized feeling, but if you want to know what hypnosis feels like, I want you to put your feet on the floor, take a deep breath, let it out, close your eyes, open your eyes. That's what hypnosis might feel like. It doesn't necessarily feel like anything because, in fact, you've been in hypnosis thousands of times in your life. And explain to them, yeah, what we do is we make sure that you're the proper level of hypnosis, but what you're really here for. I'm way more concerned that the suggestions that we give you in hypnosis work after the hypnosis is over. After all, we always say that's why we get paid the big bucks, is so that the suggestions for confidence or for strength or for motivation work after the hypnosis is over. And that is one thing that I always like to do, to kind of really shift their focus so they don't get fixated on that. And obviously, like we always say, do a really good pre-talk and say, well, listen, it's not a coma. You're going to be able to hear everything that I say while you're in hypnosis. And if you don't hear me, let me know, because you're missing what's going on. You'll miss the whole thing. Don't fall asleep. And so, yes, the hypnotized feeling does not happen with everybody. Some people never get a sense that they've been kinesthetically hypnotized. They just don't get there because their mind just doesn't work that way. Or what are your thoughts on that, Cal? Can we always create a hypnotized feeling in the body with every client? Is that possible, and is that necessary?
Well, I vary from you a little bit on that. I don't believe there is such a thing as a hypnotized feeling. I talk to my clients and I say hypnosis is a heightened state of suggestibility. So hypnosis will feel like pretty much whatever we suggest to you. If we suggest that you feel relaxed, then guess what? Hypnosis is going to feel like relaxation. If we suggest that your eyelids are locked down, glued shut, squeezing tight, cataleptic, then it's going to feel like that muscle tension. So hypnosis does not have a feeling in and of itself. Sometimes people will come in and they'll say, you know, I saw so-and-so for hypnosis, but I never felt hypnotized. And so it's kind of a red flag that goes up, and I need to let them know. But I cannot vouch for whoever you saw before. I don't know the quality of the hypnosis, but hypnosis in and of itself doesn't feel like anything. And that's just the way it is. And I just leave it at that.
Amen to that, Cal. Now, how about this? What do you think about the idea that hypnosis is mutually exclusive with a state, a brain state, that has alpha brain waves?
Yeah, I've talked about this before. That's a bunch of baloney. Because, from my understanding from graduate school days, that really comes from research into meditation and altered states like that. And, you know, if you meditate, like transcendental meditation, and you're like saying a mantra over and over again, the mind can go into a very relaxed state and go into alpha wave or other slow rhythms and stuff like that. And I think that hypnotists have wrongfully borrowed from that research, and very easily we could show that People can do all kinds of things in a heightened state of suggestibility. If you've ever seen a stage hypnotist act, some of those people are actually hypnotized, and they're singing and dancing and goofing off. We can do age regression, and the person might be crying or experiencing a very emotional situation. And believe me, brain waves, when you're doing something like that, is not slow. When you're processing a revivified experience of, you know, maybe a life-threatening nature, you're not in that alpha state. Your brain waves are jumping around and being quite active. So that is just one big fat lie. Well, it's not a lie. It's ignorance. Ignorance. So we could use some more research in that area, but the whole alpha brainwave stuff, that's really old research from, now we're using much more sophisticated kinds of apparatus at psychiatrists and medical people to understand that the brain, and they have proven that the brain behaves differently in hypnosis than in any other state, be it meditation or be it pretending or just relaxing, the brain behaves differently. How's that?
That sounds great, Cal. I mean, it is the whole alpha brainwave holdover from past research and beliefs is also one of those things, like we talked about in the last episode, that I think contributes to the whole trance, mutually exclusive with hypnosis, misunderstanding as well. You know, oh, it's that trance, or there's different pre-talks of hypnotists that I've seen out there that go, oh, well, you know, little kids are in hypnosis because they're usually most of the time in an alpha brainwave state. And that may necessarily be true sometimes. Kids tend to have a lower level of frequency in the brain. They're not as in a high state of arousal as you get when you get into adulthood. The brain is less noisy as far as from a neuroplasticity perspective. But we always say that little kids are in a higher state of suggestibility than adults. And since it's not because of alpha brainwave function, why is that, Cal?
Well, let me finish up with what our topic was. And that is that, you know, all that alpha brainwave stuff, that's just so 1970s and real crude research, and it's been borrowed by hypnotists and just it just doesn't stand up. So now you want to ask me what?
Yeah, so with the whole children being in a constant state of hypnosis thing, where we say that children are usually highly suggestible, since it's not because they're in alpha brainwave, why is it that children are highly suggestible?
Okay. Now, so let's borrow this one definition. I'm not really that crazy about it, but it'd be useful here. The bypass of the critical factor and establishment of acceptable selective thinking. Well, this whole idea of bypass of the critical factor, and it has to do with the mind's ability to reject information that it doesn't see as true. So we get these, and its ability to reject information is solely based on the information that's already in there. Stuff that's consistent, beliefs, thoughts, ideas that are consistent with what you already believe tend to go readily accepted by the subconscious mind. That information comes in and reinforces what's already in there. But things that are inconsistent, they still go into long-term memory. I like to call it the data area, but it really doesn't affect who you really are as far as habits, beliefs, emotions, that kind of thing. So the ability of the critical factor, or what I like to sometimes call the protective part of the mind, to reject these suggestions that come from the environment or from a hypnotist or even an adult or figure like that in their life is solely based on what's already in there. And when you're very young, you don't have that much experience in the world. And so when information is given to you by someone in authority, or even not an authority, it could just be another child, if you don't have information, a significant or substantial amount of information about that subject that's contrary to what is being suggested, then you're unable to reject it. It just goes in. So it's as if you were in a heightened state of suggestibility all the time. So we're not really in hypnosis all the time as children. It's just that children tend to be more highly suggestible. They believe all kinds of crazy stuff. They believe in characters on TV are real. They believe in Santa Claus. They believe in the Easter Bunny, the boogeyman, and all that stuff, just because someone taller than them said so. And it has to do with that, the inability to reject new, even crazy stuff, unless you already have experience in the world and beliefs about it. So children are not in hypnosis all the time, but they are naturally more suggestible. And by the way, as we age, we become less and less suggestible in the normal state. Now, once we go into hypnosis, we can always be highly suggestible to the suggestions we like and want from the hypnotist. But in the normal state of suggestibility, that varies, being highly suggestible as a child and less suggestible as we gain more experience in the world and as we get older. How are we doing on time, Elron?
I think we're out of time, Cal. Oops. And I just wanted to add one more thing before I wrap it up and give a preview for coming attractions, and that is that everyone does have their own arbitrary level of suggestibility. I mean, everyone has someone in their life that they just kind of believe anything you tell them, or they're more gullible than others. And other people that are more of a skeptic. They just don't believe in other stuff. And this, like Cal was talking about, goes and relates to what's already in the subconscious mind about that thing. I mean, I remember personal experience with the whole children being in a high state of suggestibility thing when I told my little sister there was monsters in the closet, and she developed an instant fear of the dark that took me a few years to get it out. Because she goes, "No, I don't want to go in there. There's monsters in my room. No." I go, "I was just kidding. There's really no monsters in your dark. In your closet, there's no monsters under your bed. It was a joke. It wasn't true." Well, I didn't really try that hard.
Well, that's right. But once it's in there,
yes, exactly.
Then the protective part of the mind, or the critical factor, whatever you want to call it, will then guard it.
That's right. It'll just protect it. And anything that doesn't match that, it's deeply held in there then. It's because the soil is so fresh, and that piece of information has already taken root and planted. And so when that new information comes in, you go, "No, I was just kidding." It's too late. It's already in there, because that arbitrary suggestibility was capitalized on, that information took root, and this is, an understanding of this is absolutely fundamental to know what we are actually doing in age regression. We are on planting those seeds. And we'll talk about that more next episode, as well as maybe get into a couple controversial topics like things like success rates and how many clients you should see before you're allowed to teach. Stuff like that. We'll see what comes out of my mouth and Cal's mouth. As you can see, you hear Cal talk, and I'm always surprised and glad when Cal will find a different way to articulate a piece of information that I've already heard him talk about, or that I already know, because every time I learn something new, and that's why I'm here. And check out our courses on hypnosiscenter.com. You're on calbannon.com right now. Hypnosis.org has some training products, some information that is worth its weight in cash and in gold. Be a one percenter. Let's move this profession forward. I'm L. Ron Ferguson, signing off.
All right. He just about said it all. Just say one more thing. Hey, Facebook, big deal. Go to facebook.com/hypnosisETC, stands for Hypnosis Etc., and get the inside scoop of what we're doing here on the show, and always be reminded when the shows are coming up. That's it. Cal Banyan, signing off. This recording is the property of Cal Banyan and Cal Banyan's Banyan Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without written permission.